For over 10 years, we've been bringing you killer metal music and frank discussions about heavy metal. Wait, who the hell is Frank? You are tuned into MSR Cast, brought to you by Mainstream Resistance. Here are your hosts, Kerry the Metal Geek and Sean the Metal Pigeon. Keep it metal.
Hi, this is James Avera. I'm going back to old school. MSR Cast? Oh, come on. Yes, we've been around for a long time, and we're not going away. This is James Avera from Hellstar. Support your local scene.
Welcome, my friend, to episode number 242 of MSR Cast. I am one of your hosts. I am Kerry the Metal Geek, along with
Sean the Metal Pigeon.
And we are doing a very special episode. We've been talking about doing more specialty episodes, and we've been talking about doing a year in review that's not something current. So there's been a couple years that we've thought about, but the first one we've gone with is 1995, which seems very close. Doesn't seem that long ago, does it?
No, it seems long ago.
Does it really?
Yeah, it does.
It's 25 years ago, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, especially when I was trying to remember, like, what was life like in 1995? I had a hard time. Maybe that's just me, though.
Well, we can get into your hard times of your life if you want to.
Yeah.
But before that, let's introduce our very special guest. This guy is a musician, and back in the late 90s, the namesake of this podcast was a fanzine called Mainstream Resistance, and he was one of my co-editors back in the day, Mr. Mark Clausen. Thank you for coming on the show, sir.
Thank you for having me after all these years. Appreciate it.
I know you kept on bugging me. I'm like, you know what? Fine. As long as the check is clearing, I'm good. No, it's an honor to have you on the show, man. It's been a while. We've been meaning to do this. We are coming up on our 15-year anniversary of doing MSR Cast. Can you believe that?
That's insane. Wow.
Yeah. 2005 was our very first episode, September, and we are still working on something very special to coincide with that release. So, yeah, you might hear some old voices back on the show for a little bit. It's going to be fun.
Yeah.
So,
okay, you guys are building a legacy now.
Sure. Let's call it a legacy. But let's move into our time machine. Let's talk about 1995. What were you guys doing back then?
I think I was a freshman or sophomore in 95. So I was just, I think I wasn't playing football, and I was mainly just playing guitar and listening to metal at that time. That's about it.
Sean, what about you?
That was in middle school, I think.
No, you were not.
Yeah. Yeah. 90, because I don't remember what grade, but I was in middle school. Probably would have been, 95 would have been seventh grade, I think. So.
Wow. I feel really old now.
Just trying not to get beat up in the halls of Hodges Bend, basically, is what I was trying to do.
So, wait a minute. So, how old are you now?
So, 38.
Okay. Well, yeah. I guess that makes sense, because I'm about to be 46.
Yep.
So, yeah, I don't think of you as being a youngin.
Yeah, I mean,
because you're so knowledgeable in metal and then in life, you know.
Well, you know, when you're most of your time spent being a metal nerd, you just have metal history to go research, and that's it. So exactly. Yeah.
I guess I just never thought about that. And you were already in high school, Mark?
Yeah, I think I was a freshman. Yeah, because I'm about to be 40. So, I was a freshman.
95, I had been out of high school for probably 2 years. I was just working, and I was dating one of my exes at the time. So a lot of the music that we are talking about, and some of the albums specifically, have a lot of meaning because just in that time of my life, you know what I mean? So let's start with our first band, Paradise Lost. Was this album your first foray into the band?
For me, it was Icon, the album before it. True Belief was the first song I ever heard by them. There used to be this thing called Rock Video Monthly that you used to be able to subscribe to, and they would send you a video compilation of different metal videos, and that was on there. So I went and bought Icon, and
I know I had seen True Belief on probably Headbangers Ball at some point, but I remember specifically Draconian Times, sitting in my car. I was waiting for somebody to get off of work, and I was sitting in my car, and Rock 101 used to have their, was it nightly or weekly, like 1 hour metal show?
It was on Sunday nights.
Yes, and I remember them playing something from Draconian Times, and I was just blown away. I'm like, this is like the Metallica of like the style of metal. It was the production of it was very, you know, Black Album, but it was totally different. It's still one of my favorite albums, and they just did a remaster. Get the mask here. We just watched the mask earlier, and the voice from the other room comes down and like green all over her face. Hey, smoking. Speaking of 95, because that movie came out in 95.
Wow.
Yeah.
That makes me feel old.
I know.
Doesn't, but that does.
So what are your first experiences with Paradise Lost in this album? Sean, let's start with you.
So, I mean, I came to them later. I think it was Symbol of Life.
What? Like really?
2002. Yeah, so I listened to this one way after the fact, after I got into them.
Symbol of Life was your first Paradise Lost album. That's weird to me.
Yeah.
Because that's totally not their normal style, you know?
Right, yeah.
Mark, what about you?
Like I said, I was already into the band, so I remember I had to special order the album from, like, what was it, Warehouse Blockbuster Music, one of those places back in the day. But like you, I heard I think it was Enchantment that they had played on.
I think it was Enchantment with the first song I ever heard.
And I had heard that before the album actually came out, so yeah, I was blown away. It was like Icon to the next level.
Yeah, I instantly became a fan, and I did venture back into, you know, their past catalog, like Icon, and then like Rotting Misery was like one of my favorites. That song was, couldn't get enough of that song. That was 1990. When their first album came out, Lost Paradise. And yeah, I've been a huge fan ever since. All eras and genres of their career, I've been a big fan. Their new album, it's a combination of little bit of everything from their career, I believe, because it goes back to, you can hear some of like that early first couple of albums. You can hear Draconian Times. You can hear Symbol of Life stuff. You could hear when they revisited some of the last couple albums, they were going back into sort of that Death Doom style. So it really, it's like a... When I talk about this album, it feels like a greatest hits album of Paradise Lost, but it's brand new, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the best way. It doesn't have any Host stuff in it, though, which is okay. I mean, I like Host, but no Depeche Mode. No Depeche Mode in the album.
But Oliver's taking care of that now. It's okay. They've got that covered, which I've heard this new Oliver song, and it's definitely Depeche Mode. It's pretty cool, though. Very cool. Let's move on to Slaughter of the Soul. Yeah. At the Gate. This is, I think, one of my first early forays into this style of melodeath.
Yeah, I think it's one of the first albums like that, to be honest.
That the picking style, that sort of was a Gothenburg sound is what they called it.
Yeah.
What are your first experiences with this album, guys?
I came to this late again. So, you know, like I got into In Flames first, and then, you know, read magazines, and they would always talk about At the Gates, and they'd be like, all right, I have to go check out At the Gates. So that was just going backwards again.
Have you?
Like long after they had broken up.
Have either of you guys seen them live before?
Yeah.
When?
No.
Twice.
Twice?
In 2008, I think I saw them when they were down there on the reunion tour.
Okay.
And then recently when they opened for
House of Blues, right?
Amon Amarth.
No, it wasn't Amon Amarth. I know Wolves in the Throne Room was on that show, wasn't it?
It was probably Behemoth.
Behemoth, that's what it was, yeah.
Yeah.
I got you a shirt from that show, didn't I, Mark?
Yeah, I could say I went to that show, but I have the shirt.
You can live vicariously, because Sean did that with the Demon the Withered show for me last year, so it's okay.
Yeah.
Since I was out of town. Yeah, it was. That was actually the very first time I'd ever seen At the Gates. I've always wanted to, but it just never happened. And they put on a phenomenal show.
Yeah, the reunion show I saw them was in the small room of Warehouse Live.
Really?
It was the only show I had been to in all my years of going to shows in Houston, metal shows, where I saw a fight break out. And it was quick, we, you know, put to bed, but it was like tensions got a little high and some guy ran into another guy in the pit and they didn't, yeah. It was strange. I remember it for that reason alone.
Now, were you a fan of Tomas? Did you follow his other bands in his career?
Yeah. Well, when he was in Night Rage?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Night Rage.
It was only one album or two albums, but I thought he was great in that.
He did there was another solo project he worked on. I can't remember. Was it The Crown?
He did that one album with The Crown that was so freaking good. Yeah.
Disfear,
that's what I was thinking of. I couldn't think of the name of it.
Yeah.
I got to meet him at the show, and he was super nice. I got a picture with him somewhere. That was pre-COVID when you could actually do that. Yeah, that was a good show. So on that note, let's get into our first set of music. Paradise Lost, The Last Time from Draconian Times, and then we're going to get straight into Blinded by Fear at the Gates. We'll be right back.
We'll be right back.
hey, welcome back, guys. And obviously, you know what that song was. But I think my one memory of that album was that when I first got into it, I was hanging out with a bunch of people. We were just talking about hanging out at places like, pre-smartphone, like hanging out with friends, where you just knew everyone would congregate at a certain cafe or bookstore or whatever.
And
there was a guy named BJ who would always hang out there, and he would just sit in his truck outside of the Barnes & Nobles and play metal. And I remember sitting in his truck one night, and he was playing, you know, Slaughter of the Soul. Mm. And I was like, oh, yeah, I've just gotten into this. And it was such a great time. We're like drinking beers in this truck and in the parking lot. And he actually introduced me to a bunch of stuff that was like, you know, like stuff that was flying under the radar that not even I wasn't picking up with, like, magazines and stuff.
Yeah, a lot of that stuff, the underground stuff, this is like early infancy of like internet, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, it was pre-MySpace internet.
Yeah, it was AOL internet, you know what I mean?
Right, yeah.
A lot of the stuff I would really scour through Metal Maniac magazines and look at the reviews and look at the ads and see what caught my eye, you know what I mean? And then I would look at the pen pal section and see what people are into. And I'm like, oh, I've never heard of this band, so I would look up stuff like that, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And back in the day, which leads me to a story about our next album, you used to be able to go into music stores and listen to CDs. And specifically, I remember hanging out with my friend Mark Butrin, who is still a good friend of mine. We were in the store called Planet Music in Meyerland Plaza. And we were browsing through the metal section, and I saw this Nevermore CD. I'm like, oh, this looks interesting. And then the little ad sticker on it said, featuring members of Sanctuary. I was like, oh, I like Sanctuary. Okay, yeah. Cool. Can you guys open this up and let me listen to it? And they opened it up, and they played the first song. I was like, yeah, I'll take this one. That was it. The self-titled Nevermore album, it's such a special place for me. It's my favorite album by them. That and the In Memory EP that came out right after that. I know we were talking about, this isn't your first foray way too much this episode, but this wasn't your first album by then, Sean. What was your first album from Nevermore?
Dead Heart in a Dead World.
That was 98, yeah. Right?
That, wasn't that
99? 2000? Yeah, it was 2000 because Politics of Ecstasy was 96 or 97. I can't remember.
97, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What about you, Mark? What was your first Nevermore album?
Weirdly enough, it was Politics of Ecstasy, but I actually went to buy the self-titled album because there was a wrestler named Raven who used to wear the shirt for the self-titled album all the time.
Really?
You know, because it never... And I went to go buy that one, but they only had Politics of Ecstasy. So I listened to that and heard Next in Line. And as soon as I heard that song, it was over.
I didn't even know about Nevermore until I saw them open for In Flames.
Really?
In December of 2000.
Jesus, man.
In Flames, Nevermore, Shadows Fall. My first time seeing Nevermore. And I actually remember I got a pick from... who was the bassist?
Jim Shepherd.
I got a pick from him. I bought the album that night from them at the table, and I met the guys. And you know, at the time, I didn't know I was meeting World Dane. I didn't even know about Sanctuary at that time.
Oh my god!
So, yeah, I met the band. I think there's an old picture of me with them too.
Yeah.
I had met In Flames before the show.
I remember us hanging out at that show. It was like right. That was when. Maybe you're into dating Kim and got her into that band.
How did I not see you at that show? I was like right up front.
That's probably like why.
Maybe.
I know we ran into each other at that show. That's when In Flames was still good.
that was a great show.
They've re-recorded Clayman and it's freaking horrible.
I'm afraid to listen to it.
We heard a Pinball Map the other day on Spotify. We were driving somewhere.
Yeah.
Crap, man. It was just bad.
I can't tell you how much I love Clayman, and I'm afraid to listen to what they've done. So, yeah.
Yeah, you don't need to.
Okay.
Bad. Yeah. They're dead to me.
They were dead to me after Clayman. That was pretty much it for me.
What was right after Clayman?
Reroute to Remain, I think.
Yeah, Reroute.
Okay. There might have been one or two good songs on that, but that was it.
Yeah, it was a weird album. It was like half and half.
Yeah. But we're not here to talk about In Flames. We're here to talk about Nevermore.
Yeah.
How many times did you get to see them in your life? Just that once?
Well, yeah, just that once.
What about you, Mark?
I know at least three times, maybe four.
I think that three or four times would have been mine, too. The last time I saw them was at Numbers, I believe, was like Warbringer, and I can't think of the other band. We actually have an autographed poster from that, like the 11x17 tour thing, you know? Yeah, that was the last time I saw them.
Mine was with Opeth, so yeah, it's been four times. Opeth off the Ghost Reveries.
Yeah.
It was that tour where they opened for them when I was living in Virginia, so I went to Washington, D.C. for that.
That was an awesome tour as well. I'm trying to remember the first time I ever saw them. I'd have to go back and look at, you know, their touring career, what they did. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I did see them when they toured with that band, you know. But I do remember the In Flames show in Shadows Fall. That was sort of, like, memorable to me. But, yeah.
Very that cool. One with Ice Dirt is probably my favorite show I saw there, where they toured with Ice Dirt.
You know, the first time, it brings back memories now. Okay, back in the late 90s when I was doing all the, Mark and I met was we would record a lot of bootleg concerts, not bootleg, but I would record concerts and we would do tape trading, like VHS trading. That's how I met Mark, and I remember recording, being upstairs, recording Nevermore when they played with Destiny's End at Cardi's.
Back
in like 99 or something, 98, 99. And I remember Worrell actually pointed up at me. He was like, I hope you brought enough for everybody to share. Like, but they didn't say anything. And he was you're at that show, weren't you? Because like Worrell was like super drunk. Like,
yeah, we
hanging on us, yeah.
There's a picture where he's like, hey, yeah, he was like hanging on us, like his arms all over us, draping on, and we were by like the pool table.
That's right, because he could barely stand. We were just trying to like geek out on him. He's like, hold me up, dude. He was so cool, though. Man, what a shame. What a loss of an immense talent, you know?
Yeah.
Sure, yeah.
Speaking of how Mark and I met, so he was one of the original members of Mainstream Resistance because we met through the tape trading scene, and I brought the idea. I'm like, you know what? I want to do a fanzine. I was looking to do just like an internet-only type of deal, but it wasn't really quite there yet. And that's when I did the research into doing an actually printed zine. And yeah, it was so much fun to do that, man. We saw so many amazing shows, got to meet so many great people, got to interview so many bands. You remember interviewing, what was the first, I'm trying to remember some of the first interviews that we did. Was it Niall that played at this bar on it was on Richmond Avenue. It was like,
yeah, it was Niall, Oppressor.
Oppressor.
Cryptopsy or Gorguts, one of the two. I don't remember.
I think it was Gorguts, not mistaken. Yeah. That
like
little,
3 in the afternoon.
That little club now is a tiki bar. And I went there for my birthday last year because I wanted to go to a tiki bar, and we had some friends meet us, and I'm sitting on this patio, and we went inside, and I'm like, this place looks really fucking familiar. I'm like, I interviewed Niall here. I remember seeing them live, and I remember seeing Slash the Snake Pit there, and I saw Kid Rock at that club because like the record label
Instant
was trying
Karma.
Instant Karma, that's what it was, yeah.
Yeah, we played there, yeah. I remember that. The band I was
Legion there played there. There. But yeah, you played in a band that I managed for a while, too. That was very interesting. Let's talk about that for a quick minute.
I mean, it was fun and it was great, but it was one of those situations where, you know, our singer didn't show up a whole lot, so other members didn't come to practice. It's, you know, the usual band drama.
Well, rest in peace to him because he unfortunately passed away.
Yeah, and Weldon, our drummer at the time, also passed away. So,
did he really?
Yeah, he did.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's been a while ago.
Wow. Wow, that's crazy. Because it featured also a member of Funeral Rites.
Yeah, Tim.
Tim, yeah. The white guy in Funeral Rites.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, Legion was great. It was Legion spelled with a J. And I had my best friend, Scott, who created like the logo and like some of the artwork. And he absolutely loved that, man. He passed away in 2000. But yeah, it was a good time. I remember going to Corpus. You know, like mm-hmm. We didn't have any place to stay. We all stayed in like somebody's like loft or something.
Oh yeah, I remember. Yeah,
you remember that?
I got my obituary hoodie got stolen.
Oh, did it?
That's why. I paid like $50 for it at the show.
Wow.
And somebody had stolen.
But, that was some good times.
And then one time we stayed in a hotel with like 20 of us all in one room or whatever it was. I think something like that. Yeah.
And I was a manager, and I'm using that with air quotes. So. It was still fun, though. I mean, it was a lot of fun. It was what? Merch bitch. Yeah, Kim was a merch bitch. One of the merch bitches.
This is true, yeah.
Yeah. It was a good time. So that was like, what, 99 to 2001, something like that?
Yeah. Yeah.
Man. All right. This is going to turn into a reminiscing episode. We're going back to 1995. Let's get back into the time machine. And we need to play Nevermore now, don't we?
Yeah.
Yes.
And I know I've talked about the first time I ever heard them was in the music store. So let's get into it. This is The Sanity Assassin, which is my favorite song from the album.
Me too. It's great.
From the self-titled Nevermore album.
Afraid to see words to lay me down. I am ever strong against the all-knowing thief of imagination. And the sanity assassin is coming down to steal your mind. So he takes an innocent vision, the blind lead the blind, they say. Meet the sanity assassin, a trick of mine, or the devil's whim.
Don't be afraid to dream.
Welcome back to 1995, everyone. We have made it back to 1995. So what did we just finish listening to, Sean?
Your favorite singer.
It is. My
previous band, The Gathering.
That's right. We're just talking about during our break here of some of our experiences at Milwaukee Metal Fest together, Mark and I. And the first year I ever went was 1999, and The Gathering played. First and only time I'd ever seen them live. They played like four songs. But I have photos from that show. She had really short, like, dreads in her hair. But I was always a fan of Annika, and I loved The Gathering, and I loved everything she did after that. And yeah, such a pleasure to be able to see her last year and get to meet her and geek out, really, and sort of like freak out next to her. It was very, yeah. I'm still speechless thinking about that day. You know what I mean?
That was a good show.
That was a very good show. But yeah, we played something from the 1995 album Mandalion, Eleanor. We could have played a different song, because there's a couple other songs on there that are sort of more popular in a way, more well known. But I absolutely adore this song. The Gathering, once they brought, this is the first album they had Annika is a singer too. They really were able to mix her vocal stylings with the heaviness of the band, you know, and it worked really, really well.
Yeah, that was something that you really never heard at that time, to have,
no,
you know, that heavy. They're almost doom metal, I guess, back when they started.
Yes.
In a lot of ways.
They're more death doom when they first started.
Yeah, and then they changed their sound when they added her, and of course got more like psychedelic and, you know, prog over the years. But
yeah.
Yeah, that was just something totally new and different, you know, which the 90s was known for.
I was that 95 was a huge year for Century Media, in my opinion. A lot of the stuff that I really listened to a lot that year was from Century Media in that year, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that and their CD compilations and video compilations, they were all over the place. I felt like almost every band was on Century Media that I was listening to.
That's right.
That
they were, probably, at some point.
That Roadrunner, it was like, that's it.
Yep. Yep. So what do we have before The Gathering?
Dissection.
Who?
Classic.
Who is this?
Dissection. Storm of the Night of the Whitesbane. This was like the first... I was talking... Because when we were doing the prep for this episode, I was trying to think of stuff I had actually listening to that year, because a lot of the stuff from 95, it's stuff that I discovered after the fact, long after 1995. So this was one of the rare albums I was like, I had gotten in on, and I had been made a copy of it from a friend of mine who lived in the neighborhood, who was older, who was into metal, and he would make me recordings of whatever he had. And this was one of the albums, and this was the first one of the first albums I remember listening to and being told, like, yeah, this band's from Europe, and thinking, like, oh, okay, so, like, not everything that's good comes from the United States. Because I had this sort of weird thing when I was younger where it was like, well, we got Metallica, we have Megadeth, we have, you know, all these great bands coming from the United States. And, you know, so we don't have Iron Maiden, but we pretty much have the dominant force in metal in the United States. It was a real immature attitude to have. And then hearing stuff like Dissection and other things like coming over. And then pretty soon after, I heard like Blind Guardian, and it was like, oh, okay, shit. Europe is like where I need to be focusing
yeah.
on. So this was like, this album was an awakening for me. It was also one of the first albums of this and the Death album that came out in the same year.
Mm-hmm. We're going to get to that for sure.
The first times I really got into extreme metal vocals, and I was like, ooh, I like this. It wasn't just noise to me. It was just like, oh, I understand what's going on now.
Yeah, it was sort of around the beginning of where some of these bands were trying more progressive style into the music. It wasn't just trying to go 100 miles an hour, you know what I mean? Trying to add some melody and some different style into what metal it was known as, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Dissection, you couldn't really call them melodic.
No.
Death metal or whatever, but they definitely had it in there, you know?
Yeah, they're really melodic, but they had like a black metal kind of in there mixed in a little bit.
Yeah, like black.
They weren't 100% death or black.
So right. They walked that line of that in between that black and death metal, that melodic black and death metal, which is great.
Yeah.
They're some of the originators of that style, really. I always think about when people say black and death metal, I think of this band right away, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And Goat Whore for some reason.
Yeah, fair.
So before Dissection, we had Nevermore, a self-titled album, set the standard for, you know, heavy thrash with, you know, power metal style vocals. I mean, they took what they were doing with Sanctuary just to the new next level with, I think, better songwriting, but some of that stuff did in their career was so fucking good. And they deserved every praise that they ever got. So, talking about 95 real quick, we're going to talk about some of the other albums later that, you know, we're not going to play something from. But I want to talk about some of the bands that were newly formed in 1995. You guys ready for this?
Yeah.
Aborted, Agalloch, Borknagar.
Mm-hmm.
There's a couple I'm going to skip over, like Chevelle and Crazy Town. Darkest Hour, Insepharum, Evergrey, Melakesh, Moon Sorrow, Shadows Fall, Skyforger, Slipknot apparently started in 95, Solifald, Thrifing, I was never able to say that band name.
Thrifing,
In Virgin Black. And of course, you also had, like, unfortunately, bands like Godsmack, too, but, you know, not everybody can be perfect.
That's true.
So some of these bands have been around for 25 years. Like, it's still hard to believe that 95 was 25 years ago. I feel so old sometimes, man.
It feels like maybe 10 years ago at the longest, but yeah, not 25.
Right. It's super crazy, man. Like some of the early, like, you know, Judas Priest stuff that I was into, I'm like, oh shit, some of that stuff is 40 years old now. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's hard to think about. All right. So, what band do you think about when you hear the term death metal? What band is the epitome of that name for you? It's in the title. I'm gonna give you a hint.
Yeah, I mean, death. Well, you know, because death was the first death metal band I heard.
Me too.
I mean, that's technically not true because I heard Cannibal Corpse in Ace Ventura.
Okay.
But I didn't really. But I was so young, I didn't know what that was.
That was 94, right? When that album came out, or when that movie came out.
Was it? I thought it was earlier than that.
Maybe.
I think it's earlier because The Bleeding came out in 94, and that was, they did, what, Hammer Smash Face and Ace Ventura? So
yeah.
Like 92, 93 probably.
Yeah.
At least in 94.
Wow.
Yeah, Death was my first real exposure, like, as a fan of heavy music.
Uh-huh.
Like people who I knew in the neighborhood and at school who were older than me going, like, well, you know, you're listening to Megadeth and, you know, you think they're the heaviest thing in the world. You really need to listen to this band. You really need to listen to this band, and kind of pointing me in that direction. I went to when I first got into Hodges Bend. I've written about this before. This guy in my percussion section and band, his name's Chad. Him and Eric, they were these two metalheads in my section, and I they were wearing Metallica shirts and like old like Master. And so anyway, I go in there and I'm like wanting to talk metal with them, but I talk about like Metallica. And they kind of, like, Eric was always nice to me, but Chad would sneer at me and be like, he just thought I was like a poser, basically. And I was, at that time, that word was a big deal, being called a poser, where he was like, you know, the only Metallica album you know is the Black album. And I was like, he kind of like forced me in his sort of like, you know, dickish way to go in and look at other stuff. And he was like, yeah. Like, go back and like, come back and talk to me when you like talk, like listen to other things, like listen to this band. And I was like, okay. So I went and like found stuff And he kind of forced me to become like a deeper, more involved metalhead rather than just going like Metallica and Megadeth are like the epitome of everything and Iron Maiden.
Yeah.
And so like through him, it was like I heard stuff like Death and yeah.
You know,
mentor.
Underground shit.
Yeah.
Metal mentor.
Yeah, your metal mentor, but not in the way you wanted.
Right.
Gave you that kick in the ass you needed. You know, yeah. I used to listen to Sweet Nightmares. My cousin was living with me for a while, and we were into, you know, the thrash stuff. This was like 90, 91, 80, 89, you know. 90 was a very important year for metal for me. Some of my favorite albums of all time, some of my top five albums are still from that year. And we're going to get to that in another episode because I do want to tackle 1990 because there's this – so much important music for me that year. But we would used to record Sweet Nightmares, which is, of course, Wes Weaver and my old mentor, Bill Bates, who's passed away now. We used to record their shit, and we would listen to it on cassette, and we would just freak out with some of the stuff they played. So it's like first time I ever heard Napalm Death, first time I ever heard Cannibal Corpse and Death, and like I think maybe it was like, Was the 90 album Spiritual Healing, and then like they played stuff from like Leprosy, man, and Deicide, that first Deicide album they played something off of, and it blew me away. And because like when me and my friend Scott, we would listen to Slayer on cassette, we're like, this is the heaviest thing ever, it's never going to get heavier than this, you know?
Right, yeah.
But it did, and it really broadened my horizon of what, you know, metal was, because I was really stuck in that, you know, I guess what popular metal was back in the day in that time.
Mainstream metal,
like Megadeth and Metallica and that type of stuff, all the thrash stuff that was really popular. But the underground, it's really where I discovered a lot of good music, man. Not that I wasn't into a lot of that stuff back in the day, too. But yeah, and I can't wait to dive into that stuff. But yeah, the Death... I loved Death. They were one of my favorite death metal bands, and the album 1995 was Symbolic, which features one of my favorite drummers of all time, Mr. Gene Hoagland.
Yeah.
If you haven't watched Gene Hoagland recently on Twitch, as he'll just go on Twitch and talk and play songs from his career on drums, dude is very, very animated. He's not what you would expect him to be. He's very strange. Like when I got to interview Chuck Childiner on The Sound of Perseverance, I remember doing the interview and being so taken aback by how nice he was and how he almost had that like that surfer California mentality to him. You know what I mean? He was just such a nice guy. Not what you expect when you hear about the godfather of death metal, you know what I mean? But yeah.
Right.
So let's get back into Symbolic. Who picked this track?
Was this me? Yeah, this was me.
South
this is my favorite track. This is my favorite track on the record. Yeah.
It's a good song.
It's not actually, when I think about like my favorite death album, it's probably not my favorite, but it's sentimental favorite because it was the first one I heard.
What's your and favorite?
It was sort of my Sound of Perseverance. Easy.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
This one's my favorite, but I'm like, I'm the same. This was the first death album I got into. I got into death metal actually because of Sepultura, because they were playing with Pantera, and that was the first show I went to. And
I was like,
wow, it's so heavy, much heavier than, you know, even Pantera and all that. And Headbangers Ball would play, you know, Into the Pit or whatever their little segment afterwards. It was always
like Obituary World. It's always Obituary, Sepultura, or Napalm Death.
That's how I got into, you know, death metal was from that. But this out, Symbolic's one of my favorite metal albums of all time. I think I pretty much know every single note on it. I listen to it probably still about four times a year or more at least. And it was just like nothing I'd ever heard. You know, all the death metal I heard before was extreme deep vocals and growling and, you know, down-tuned guitars and stuff, and this was like
so much melody and
razor sharp sound and production.
Yeah,
not deep growls, you know, a lot of melody and stuff involved, so almost progressive at times.
I absolutely, yep, very progressive. I absolutely love Crystal Mountain. It's one of my favorite tracks of all time.
That's amazing.
This such well, see, a great, and, Dear Tolerance, such a great song too.
And the, you know, describing it as razor sharp is perfect, because before I heard this album, I had this memory of being, I was at a friend's house and I was listening to early Sepultura and just going like, this is shit. Like, what are you listening to? Like, you know, and I, it was just like that mental block of, I can't get into this because of the vocals are too dense and the sound, the production's so muddy or whatever to my ears back then. And then I heard this, and you hear death metal in a different context, like a different sound context.
Yeah.
And it helps you get into it. Your brain kind of cracks that barrier and you're like, oh, I get why this is awesome now, you know? And then you can go back to Sepultura and go, fuck, this is awesome. Yeah, I get it. So, yeah.
I was always a big fan of Sepultura. I got to ask Andres Kisser, there was during Comic-Con last week, Nuclear Blast was doing some live streaming, and Andres was doing a live stream, and it was very cool. He was just not a lot of people in the room, but got to talk about, you know, I asked him how it was playing with Anthrax, and because they just did that, you know, they're doing that simple quarta. Have you seen these guys? If you haven't checked it out, go check out the Sepultura YouTube page. They're playing songs in quarantine, and then they're doing like Q&As and all this kind of cool stuff. So they did a song with Devin Townsend last week, which is phenomenal. But there's been so many cool things they've done. So just do yourself a favor, go check out the Sepultura YouTube page and see what they've been doing during their quarantine. But yeah, it was so cool.
And their new album.
Yeah, and their new album's really good too.
It's awesome, and I haven't even liked any of their stuff with Derek Green until this album, but I love it.
He's been in the band for 20 years, bro. Come on.
No. I'm still like a Rise and Schizophrenia type
yes,
guy.
I know. Rise is one of my favorite death metal albums of all time.
Yeah, me too.
Death Thrash, I guess, which if you really wanted to call it that. let's move on. Let's get into Death, and we have another great segment of music coming up, celebrating the year of 1995 in metal. I feel like Casey Kasem at some point. Do you have any long distance any long distance recommendations you have, or whatever they used to say? But all right, let's get into A Thousand Eyes from Symbolic.
Thank you.
Back to the show. We were just playing Blind Guardian. It's a band that I think we're all into, right?
Yeah, for sure. Oh, yeah. And good job on that coming back, by the way. First time you ever done that. Broke a cherry.
Awesome. It was great.
Did a great job. Okay, do it over now. No, I'm joking.
Again and again.
Yeah, so we all picked something from this album. We all picked different songs, I think, but we all picked something from Imagination from the Other Side. But which is a weird thing. It's I didn't hear this album in 95. It took a couple of years afterwards to actually hear the album and go back into their career. What about you guys?
I heard this in 98 because, I heard, the song Lord of the Rings on hardradio.net.
Wow.
It's an internet radio station.
Yeah, I remember that.
And they played it and I was like, what, who is this band? And so I found out who they were. They didn't have domestic release for the United States then. And in 98 or 97 or 98, Century Media did a deal with Virgin Germany to bring over Blind Guardian albums to release them in the United States. And so they released Nightfall, the new album, and Tales and Somewhere Far Beyond and this one. So I bought Nightfall and this one and Tales at first. And yeah, I mean, this was this band was cataclysmic for me. They just altered my perception of what they were. The band where I had been craving music like that my entire life, being a Tolkien fan, being a fantasy novel fan.
Yeah.
And then you hear it and you're like, fuck.
I will tell you the very first song I ever heard from this band was in 98, and that was Into the Storm. It was on a Century Media compilation album.
Yeah.
And then I was like, who the fuck is this?
Yeah.
And then I got the album after, like, soon after that. I'm like, oh, it's a concept album about Lord of the Rings. I'm like, all right, I'm sold. I love these guys. And then, like you said, they started bringing some of their other music into America because it was all import before, all German stuff. You know, it was hard to get.
Yeah.
But, yeah, this Nightfall and Middle Earth and then Imagination from the Other Side are my two favorite albums from them, for sure.
Yeah.
Me too. Yeah. This one, probably, I don't know, it's tough to pick. It's like I switched between the two. It just depends on the mood. I think the production's a little cleaner on Imaginations.
Yeah, I think so.
But they're both full of just incredibly great songs, and you just want to, you know, kind of start to finish on the album, listen to it. But I'm like Harry. I got into them probably off the same compilation. I wouldn't even doubt it because that was about the time, you know, we were hanging out. So
yep.
Into the Storm, that was the first song I could remember hearing as well.
And I remember it was at Milwaukee. It was it might have been at Milwaukee Metal Fest where I got that compilation. This is like coming back to me. It was before we went, Mark, but I was with a different friend. Like maybe I went 4 years in a row, 3 or 4 years in a row. This is promoting what I was doing, you know? And, wow. Yeah. I remember checking in, getting my press badges, and then they gave us some Century Media, compilation CDs when we checked in our little, you know, baggage, whatever it was. We went back to our rental car and we went to go check into the hotel, and we popped the CD in on the way to the hotel. And that was like the second track on the CD. And it's just like, I was like, wait a minute, what is this? And that was it. That's what blew me away. It's like little things you remember like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And luckily
the first power metal band you really got into?
Power metal, no.
You were into Halloween and stuff, though.
I was into Halloween for a long time. I was into more a little bit thrashier power metal, like, you know, Hellstar and, you know, Eisters and stuff like that. But, yeah. I've always been a huge Halloween fan, even from the late 80s. So I can't say that's the first power metal I've ever heard.
Apparently you've had a bunch of power metal bands before this one. So,
yeah. But it was the first thing that combined my love of that genre with fantasy and being geeky, you know what I mean? I was like, this is perfect.
And also Boy and Guardian, I mean, you know, they were heavy, you know?
Yeah.
And they had that kind of force and
they had that, like, chug to them.
Yeah. And, you know, Hanzi, like on another Holy War on this album, which, you know, could have played that and that would have been just as representative as Bright Eyes. But that song, man, he screams so convincingly in that song, like the passion and the way he delivers his vocals. It's like what I remember, just I would be with like friends of mine. We'd drive around Houston and just have Boy and Guardian albums on repeat and just like scream along to this stuff. And I was obsessed with this band for so long, and I'm still obsessed with them. But back then when I first got into them, they were all I was listening to pretty much. And, I remember, you know, when you guys were talking about Cardi's earlier.
Yeah.
I remember they were going to come, Blind Guardian, for the first time to the United States. They did a tour in 2002. They were scheduled to come to Cardi's on Black Friday, the day after Thanksgiving, in 2002. And the 2 days before that, they put up an announcement on their website that they were canceling the Houston show. I was so excited. I was so looking forward.
Why did they cancel?
Because the official reason that they gave
was the band gave
was that the venue couldn't accommodate them technically, like whatever their stage requirements were or something. And I was so crushed. I remember being drunk outside of Cardi's that night, Black Friday.
Did you go there anyways? You're like,
Yeah. Me and my friend Matt Roy, we were so pissed. Like, you know, we were so ready for that show. And we were thinking about burning the building down. Wow. We were like in the parking lot going like, fuck this place. Fuck this place. And we had been to shows there before.
I'm glad
we
had a good
time there. But we were so furious. And like, I remember we had like bottles of wick and we were like, fucking burn this place down. We were in a bad state.
But I know you've seen them live since then, though.
Many times, yes. Yeah. But at the time, I just thought, like, this is my one chance, and this place fucked it for me. And so, yeah, I was very upset.
Moving on. Between Death and Blind Guardian, who better than Fear Factory? D-Manufacture. It's literally probably in my... I don't want to say top five albums of all time, but maybe top 15 albums in my life. I absolutely love this album. It was a time in my life where I discovered this. I heard Soul of a New Machine before, but when D-Manufacture came out, I was dating this girl at the time, and she got into it as much as I did. And we literally wore out every copy of this album that we had. We listened to it way too much. but yeah, D-Manufacture, I think, is the pinnacle of this complete genre of music. Yeah. It's heavy. It has the elements that you wanted from like those industrial bands. It was well written. You know, Burton actually was singing really well on this album.
Yeah.
And his death stuff. I remember one of my highlights of my life was actually being able to moderate the panel at Comic Palooza for Fear Factory. And we had them in 2016, 17. I can't remember. Maybe it was 16. Just in the year before I got to moderate the panel was Dave Ellison from Megadeth. And it was just like, how the fuck did I get here? How am I here? How am I sitting on a stage with Dino and Burton? How did this happen?
Yeah.
Because right before that show, they were doing a tour of they were doing their anniversary tour. Was it? Maybe it was Obsolete. And I set up an interview. I interviewed Dino before the show to talk about promote for Comic Palooza, their upcoming appearance and all that. And the first night at Comic Palooza, we went out to dinner at the Papacitos in the hotel, and Dino was at the table next to me. I was like, you know, I'm not going to bug him. But when they were walking out, he remembered who I was and stopped to talk to me. I was like, that's crazy. How did that happen? Awesome. But yeah, there's some good times, man. Considering how much of a fan I really was, and Kim was a huge fan too of this album in particular. So it just means so much to me. It was really hard to pick a song from this album to play. Because Mark, you originally picked Replica, which,
yeah,
great song, but it's been, I'm sure, you know, everybody's heard that. I wanted to go with a different song. So I went with Dog Day Sunrise, which is, you know, based off of a great underrated movie, number one, but such a great song too. But
and a different song on the album too, because it's not as, it's a little,
yeah,
really no death vocals in it. It's kind of,
a little bit more atmospheric, a little bit more, yeah, not as formulaic type of the way they wrote their music, the guitars and stuff like that. not saying that in a bad way at all. You know what I mean?
Yeah, of course. It was definitely a different sound to the, compared to the rest of the album.
What about you? What about you, Sean?
I didn't listen to Fear Factory until Obsolete. So, because I remember seeing them on the cover of Kerrang. I used to subscribe to Kerrang.
Yeah.
And they came on the cover issue, and I was like, "Oh, cool! Fear Factory. That's a name I've heard before." And so I finally listened to Obsolete, and they were kind of blowing up around then too because of Cars. I think had come out, or
right, yeah, their cover song
had just come out, yeah. So, and then I went back and heard Demanufacturing. I was like, "Oh, okay, now this is their freaking awesome album." Because yeah, it was definitely like heavier. They hadn't gone over it. It was the perfect balance of the industrial-ish stuff and the metal stuff. So, yeah, definitely their best album.
Yeah, that album's like one of my favorite albums of all time as well, and has a lot of personal meaning to me because at the time it was one of those bands, you know, when you're younger you're like, nobody knows about this band, it's my special band. And I remember when that came out, that was what it was like, oh, here, check out this band, check out this album. And I even back in the old bulletin board days before I don't know, that's really showing my age, but you used to, you know,
yeah, on these things
called bulletin boards, and that was my handle, was Demanufacture.
Was it so, really?
Yeah, that album really was a game changer because nothing else had sounded like that. No one had really, I don't remember anybody really mixing the death and the clean vocals so well. Yeah. I know they did on Soul of the New Machine, but it really wasn't, it was a whole new level on Demanufacture vocally for him.
I remember, I actually got to see them live on this tour when they were promoting it. Guess who they were opening up for?
Who's that?
Iron Maiden.
Oh, wow.
On the X Factor tour, yep, that's right. They played in this weird.
The Abyss, right?
No, it was a weird place up north. It was a converted, not a convenience store, but a grocery store. But it was weird. Like, so you walked in the front door, and there was like maybe 20 feet, and then there was the stage, and then off to the left.
Millennium.
That was the Millennium. Yes, thank you.
Yeah.
Because I saw Trouble and Cathedral there, too. But, yeah, that was a weird tour. I got to see them many times on that tour cycle. But, yeah, just seeing – there was, like, barely anybody there for Iron Maiden. You know what I mean? It was a weird time for them.
No Bruce. Everybody was like that.
Because the X Factor came out in that year, too, in 1995, which we're not playing anything from it. But there's a couple of good tracks. You know,
yeah.
Blaze Bailey – it wasn't a horrible fit for the band. It just wasn't the right fit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
His range just isn't like Bruce's at all. So I think that's what held him back was his range is pretty limited.
Pretty low, too.
And just the timing of it all, you know.
Yeah.
95 was a rough year for
metal, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's right when all the, you know.
It was when Bush's first album came out. Oh, yeah. I should tell you.
Okay. Everything. There you go. Yeah. Moving on, let's talk about our. Well, I just sort of name dropped them a second ago, but Cathedral, The Carnival Bazaar. I absolutely love this album. It's in the song you picked, Mark Hopkins, Witchfinder General. It's such a catchy song based off of a great, great classic movie. And I fucking love Lee Dorian in Cathedral. His performance, his deliverance, this style of like happy psychedelic doom metal, it just suits his style so well. You know what I mean?
Yeah, he pulls it off without it being like cheesy. You almost think sometimes it's going to be cheesy what he's saying and some of the things he does, but he always pulls it off and it works. That album was a follow-up to Ethereal Mirror, so that was a big, you know, a big album for them to come up with, and I love it. I like Night of the Seagulls a lot. That song is really awesome. Another movie that they made, another old Hammer horror.
Yeah, a lot of influence from the Hammer horror movies. Hopkins' Utopian Blaster is a great song. What a great album. But this song just sticks out in my mind. I mean, you have Tony Iommi on your album. Come on. As a guest star. Come on. But yeah, if you're not a fan of Cathedral, they've done a lot of more death doom, slower, like, you know, funeral dirgy stuff in their career. But this mid-90s stuff, man, is just so fun. And so, yeah. So you just want to, like, snap your fingers and, you know, it's just, it's different. And that's what I love about some of these bands that were trying stuff all the way from, like, the early 90s into, like, the sort of, like, 95, 96, 97. These metal bands, these thrash bands, these, you know, doom bands, whatever they were not afraid to try different styles of music mixed in what they were doing. I don't want to say progressive, because when you think progressive, you think start thinking about prog metal. It's not prog metal. It's just like Death Angel Act 3 in 1990, Reverend, and even Exodus and all these other bands. They were trying not different genres, but just different songwriting styles. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it wasn't like a bunch of bands. Like, I think nowadays it seems like bands all kind of have the same sound. A lot of them do.
Yeah.
Same production, same, you know. Whereas back in the 90s, it seemed every band wanted to stand out on their own and create something new. Like, totally new.
Even if they failed at it.
Yeah, even if they failed, they still.
Because you heard some that failed, but.
Yeah.
And I consider them failing. But they might have sold millions and millions of albums, and I'm not mentioning any names, Metallica. But moving on. That consider a fail to me, but, you know.
Yeah. We'll talk about the Century Media stuff. That was the groundbreaking stuff.
Yes.
Not Metallica.
That's right. So let's get into Hopkins Witchfinder General, and this is a pretty good set we have coming up, so check it out, and we'll be right back.
I am Matthew Hopkins, Witchfinder.
Witchfinder.
You confess?
turned me pale. We taught the village Satan's ghost awaits. The world falls into darkness as she melts at the stake. Yeah, Matthew Hopkins weeks, find a general.
We'll be right back.
Welcome back to the show, my friends. Episode number 242 of MSRcast. This is our 1995 rewind. So right there, we just listened to one of my favorite bands of all time, the Doom Legends themselves, Trouble. And of course, I had to pick the song. Anybody who knows me knows that one of my favorite bands is the Monkees. And when this album came out, I remember going to the store, driving to pick it up. This is way before internet, you know. I picked it up, popped it into my car, started listening to it, and I was looking at the track listing. And I was like, okay, it says the Porpoise song. There's no way that's the same song. And damn it, it was. I was so happy and excited that one of my favorite bands of all time was covering another one of my favorite bands of all time. It was like that weird sing, you know what I mean? So yeah, this was from Plastic Greenhead, their 1995 release, which is a little bit more. It was a little bit more of a combination of what they were doing with their. It was like their self-titled 1990 album, and then like the psychedelic stuff they were doing. But it's a great fucking album. And Eric Wagner is still one of my favorite vocalists of all times. If you have not heard this album, please check it out. April of 1995. What do you guys think about this album?
This was the first Trouble album I ever heard.
Really?
I think it was just one of those things where I just picked it up because I liked the album cover or whatever. And I was really into, you know, that groovy. It's almost like stoner metal in some ways.
Psychedelic, yeah.
Yeah, like Cathedral, going back to them. This kind of, you know, being a fan of them, you know, getting into Trouble was pretty easy for me on this album because I was already into bands like Cathedral and stuff. So it's just all about the groove and and Eric's vocals are just amazing.
So Manic Frustration is the album previously, which was completely psychedelic, like psych metal. Which is, I love that album too. So Trouble is one of my favorite bands of all time. And I'm glad that Hammerheart Records is re-releasing in these on vinyl soon, which I've never owned any of these later albums on vinyl, and I really am looking forward to it. If you had never heard the band Lid, have you? You know Lid, right, Mark?
Yeah, Lid's the one with the Danny from Anathema.
Yeah, Danny Cavanaugh from Anathema and Eric Wagner with a solo album.
That's a great album.
Phenomenal. I found that on vinyl last year, actually, when I was in Austin for a couple of days. Yeah. I was like, I'm buying that. That's mine.
Yeah, you'll never see that again.
No, for sure. Yeah, Trouble's one of my top 10 bands of all time, and I absolutely love this album, anything they've ever done. Currently, their vocalist is the singer from Exhorter, Kyle Thomas. And when I was at that show Monday, pre-COVID, the Exhorter Overkill show, and I they were hanging out by their booth, and I brought the new Exhorter album. Then I pulled out the Trouble album, the Distortion Field that he worked on. He was so excited that I brought a Trouble album for him to sign. So he talked to me about Trouble for a little bit. It was so cool.
I don't
cool.
have to sign Slaughter in the Vatican for the 1,000th time. It's something different.
That's right. Yeah. It's great. I've heard rumors that they're working on a new album, but Eric Wagner's been going strong with his stuff, like The Skull, and then Blackfinger was his other band. All great stuff, man.
Yeah, The Skull might as well be Trouble, in my opinion.
Totally.
It's really Trouble.
I got to see them a couple years ago at this benefit show here in Houston for the homeless or something. It was like this weird place. It was like an outside stage or the Mexican restaurant inside. And there was like sand right in front of the stage. And I tried to talk to him a little bit beforehand, Eric. And he was just sort of like, not brush me off, but he was sort of like nonchalant. But after they played and he saw me up the front of the stage, and I knew every single lyric, he like talked to me for a long time after that. He was like, oh, hey, you're a real fan. Ron Holzner was actually on bass touring with him at that point. So I got to talk to both of those guys about Trouble stuff, and I bought all their vinyl and everything. It was such a great day. It was very fanboyish, you know what I mean? It was cool. I had never met him before, you know?
Wow.
So moving on, before that was Sabotage, Dead Doesn't Matter Anyway from the album Dead Winter Dead. And the song, I picked this particularly because it's one of the few songs on this album that John Oliva sings. And right, he does it phenomenally. At some point, he sort of like, it goes into sort of like a, I won't say like a rap style, but it's a little like, we're a little fast staccato or whatever that is, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But this album, I think, was a turning point in their career. They only put out one album out after this, which was, I can't think of the name of it now, but.
Two albums.
Was it two albums?
Yeah, Wake of Magellan and then.
Yes, okay.
Poets and Madmen.
Poets and Madmen, that's what I was thinking. I was thinking Wake of Gentlemen was before this, but yeah, you're right, it's after. But this is the song, this album is where the song that sort of turned into Trans-Siberian Orchestra comes from.
Yeah, Christmas Eve, Sarajevo.
Yeah, which people don't know that. People think that it's a TSO original. No, it's a Sabotage original because TSO, if you look at it, is Sabotage.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, Johnny Lee in there. Chris Caffrey and
Chris Caffrey, Johnny Lee Middleton,
Zach sometimes sings.
Did some work with him too, and he was on the Handful of Rain albums.
Who's that? I'm sorry.
Alex Skolnick.
Oh yeah, Skolnick. Yeah. I've never seen them live. I've always sort of wanted to, but I know they have two different touring groups, so I never know who I'm going to see live. You know what I mean?
Right.
Because I know Dax Stevens has toured with them doing vocals, and my dad used to love those TSO albums. I'm like, if I got him into Sabotage on Handful of Rain.
Yeah.
Because when I played him that song Chance, he fucking loved that song. He was like, we bought him a copy of that album for his car. It was so cool. What's up?
The symphony part in that song?
Yes. The queenness awesome. Of it he loved so much, you know? Yeah. Yeah, I've been a big Sabotage fan for a long time. Hopefully,
I think it was an underrated album.
It's not their best album for sure, but it is a good album.
I think it's really good. It's darker. It's definitely. I mean, weirdly enough, like Handful of Rain, I thought was kind of a bright sounding album, even though it's kind of, like a tribute to Chris Oliva and stuff. But I always thought this album was darker and more gritty and heavier. Kind of the theme, it's like, wasn't it about the war or something in Europe at the time?
Yeah, Sarajevo. So
it was cool concept, everything. It's overlooked, I think.
I think it's their best album since Chris died, in my opinion. I mean, Handful of Rain I like, but I think, like you said, it's darker. It's a little, I don't know. I thought it was better than Handful of Rain overall.
Yeah. Wake of Magellan was good, too. Oh. Wake of Magellan has that weird defect where it's like you don't use the Sabotage logo on the cover. They have it like in just some regular font. You're kind of like, what happened?
Oh, yeah. I know. When this album came out, this was bringing back to my memory. I was working in this anime store inside First Colony Mall.
Animagic?
Exactly. That's it. I have no... I'm not an anime fan. I don't like anime, but the reason the guy hired me is he was modding Sega Saturn or something and Sony PlayStation at the time. And he taught me to do that, and then I took over all their online sales. So anytime they would get an order come in, I would go grab it in the store, and then package it up, and then we'd bring it to the post office and all that. But I actually wound up working in the store too. And everybody was so jealous. I was working in an anime store. I'm like, eh. But it was like at one point we were like right inside the food court, which was so weird to be a store inside the food court. You know what I mean? You remember when it was there?
Oh yeah.
Vaguely.
It was right next to like where the Chick-fil-A and stuff was.
Yeah.
It was very interesting. But I remember going in and open the store, and then I would hang out on hardradio.com or something like that.
Yeah.
And for some reason, I remember listening to this album one of those days I was in the shop. So like over and over and over, and just brings me back to that memory.
Nice.
Yeah. Not knowing how big they were going to get from this. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, the interviews that John has given about like how they went, they actually sent this that song to radio stations around Christmas time under the Sabotage banner at first.
Right.
I'm like, here, play this, you know, and they got nothing for it. And then someone, I forgot the story, but someone suggested to them, like, John, try a different name, you know, or remove the name Sabotage and see what happens. And then it blew up. And they basically built the entire project off the success of that one song. So it's kind of weird to think that there's just like a massive hit on this album.
Yeah.
But there is, yeah.
Because people disassociated them with being a metal band, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It wasn't until they got, they had to rebrand themselves, basically.
Yeah.
And it worked.
Yeah.
Still works today.
That's right. So coming up next, this is some New Orleans, some Noland doom metal here.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Down, man. I was a huge fan of this album.
Yeah.
I think it's their best album.
Oh, easily their best album, yeah.
No comparison, to be honest.
You picked this, didn't you, Mark?
Yeah, this album's one of those that I've loved since it came out. I bought it. I was a huge Pantera fan and Dimebag fan, and bought it just because Phil was on it and wasn't even expecting much from it, and the thing just blew me away. I liked Corrosion of Conformity and Crowbar too, so it was like all these bands I loved in one project, but it actually sounded awesome because, you know, a lot of sound side projects kind of they don't turn out as great.
Yeah, because it started as a side project because, I mean, you have Phil Anselmo, you have Pepper Keenan from TOC, you have Kurt from Crowbar, Jimmy Bauer, and Todd Strange. It's phenomenal, like, all-star lineup, you know, from those genre. And
yeah,
they did not phone it in. Every song is catchy. And 25 years later, it's still a phenomenal album.
Yeah, I mean, and when you grow up like as a metalhead in the suburbs in Texas, Pantera is like such a big deal.
Yeah,
especially at that time. I remember this album when I first heard it was in 90, was when it came out, because specifically a friend of ours had gotten it. He was the only person who had it, so we were all going to go over to his place to listen to it. Daniel Hayes, who sadly passed away recently, but
sorry.
We all went to his place to listen to it. I remember just like people I didn't know were in the room too. Like, I don't know how he knows him, but everyone's here to listen to this album. Why? Because Phil from Pantera is on it. And that's the only reason we were there. So it was like, that was a big deal.
It's weird for me because when you say the name Down, the first thing that pops in my mind is a guitar riff. That dan 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 dan. I was like, it just like pops in my head when I hear the band name. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And that's so cool. And I was a huge Pantera fan back in that time. I actually dated a girl in high school that was their cousin, who broke up with me because I promised her I would not stage dive at a Dead Horse show or go into the pit. And it was the first time I ever did a stage dive. And I came to school the next day. It was a black eye. So wow. They're all legends. This is a legendary album. It's genre defying, really. It transcended of just because I guess with Phil being involved, it was all the Pantera fanboys, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it really brought this genre of music, this sludgy stoner metal style, into the forefront a little bit more, you know. Got COC got more popular, everybody got more popular off of it, you know.
Yeah, it was the first my introduction to COC actually.
Really?
It was through this, yeah.
You surprise me every day, sir.
Yeah. Mine was Albatross and Deliverance. And
yeah,
you had all these things before that.
So. Mine was Blind. I'm sorry, but with a Bullet.
Yeah, I heard that. I'd heard that before, but I didn't remember who it was. But it was one of. But yeah, Down, that album changed my life. It's weird. It's like that, Trouble in Cathedral. I kind of got all into those albums all at the same time. Mm-hmm. And they all have that groovy, like Sabbath-y stoner vibe going on all of them.
Yep.
So that was really influenced my guitar playing. And, you know, I love those albums. still.
Very cool. So let's get into Lifer from Down. This is from the album Nola. We'll be right back.
Yeah. mistakes. It doesn't tempt to be like this. If you don't make a friend now, one might make you. So learn the gentle art of making enemies.
Don't you look so surprised? Happy birthday, fucker! You pull that candle out, we're gonna kick you, kick you! Don't say you're not because you are! Don't say you're not because you are! It's a reason not that you are! It's a reason not that you are! Wearing you. This year you'll sit and take it, and you will like it. It's the gentle art of making enemies. And I deserve a reward, cause I'm the best fuck that you ever had. And if I tighten up my hold, you may never see the light again. There's always an easy way out.
Bottom, you are. survive?
Blade! Sandwich!
Who survive?
Blade! Sandwich!
Who survive?
Blade! Sandwich!
Blade! Sandwich!
Winding down the 1995 rewind. Coming to the end almost.
Yeah, we are coming to the end. It feels like yesterday, man. I'm telling you still.
But, you know, like, Gwar's meat sandwich.
Yes.
Brings back such good memories for me because I just remember I had a friend of mine who was obsessed with this band, with this album in particular. And
with me?
Just go over to his house and just, like, sit there and just get stoned and listen to this record.
I love this album. I'm a huge Gwar fan. Anything from like Hello to like, you know, especially this whole 90s era of Gwar, I saw them so many times live. And I was always a big fan of Ragnarok because it really epitomized the mixture of comedy and metal to me. It was such a great album. No matter how cheesy and corny they get with their lyrics, their songs are always great and catchy and fun. And I mean, Ragnarok, when that Thor Ragnarok movie came out, every time I would see that, I'm like, oh, the Gwar song would pop in my head. Ragnarok and roll, Ragnarok and roll.
Yeah.
You know, it's just so fun. And then, Meat Sandwich has such a it's such a quirky, fun little ditty. You know what I mean? And that's what Gwar was fun for. They're an amazing band to see live. They put on a phenomenal stage show. They weren't just seeing a band perform; they were seeing a stage show. You were seeing something that you usually didn't see and didn't get to experience a lot. You know what I mean? Otis was a great front man. Dave Brocky was a great front man in that band. And it was so amazing all the hard work they really put into that band. Okay, I'm going to say this. If we're complaining in this day and age about wearing a mask to go to the fucking grocery store, try performing in those masks for 25, 30 years. Come on. And some of those guys are on stilts, you know what I mean? Shut up.
Right.
You have no reason to complain. Gwar did it first. Come on. I'm a huge Gwar fan. And when they were at, speaking of Comic Palooza again, they were at Comic Palooza that 2015, I believe. They didn't perform. They just were there signing autographs and hanging out at the show. It was such a weird experience to see him in that light, you know what I mean? Like Sleazy P. Martini was there. Everybody was in full costume. It was so great. They were so cool. Got pictures with them. I got an autograph from them. It was such a cool experience. You don't get to experience Gwar in that way. You know what I mean?
All right.
Yeah. Very cool. I've been a huge Gwar fan for a long time. I don't know if this is my favorite album. I still think Scum Dogs is my favorite album. What about you guys?
This would be my favorite album just because I heard it like a billion times.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I would say Scum Dogs is probably mine just because I probably heard it more. And probably This Toilet Earth, I think I've heard. That was the first one I ever bought. So, but yeah. This is a good one too.
Yep. Yeah. They've had some great albums in their career. And before that, it's a band. Who picked this one?
I think we both picked this one.
I sort of picked it too.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I was into Faith No More already around in 95 because obviously, like, Epic, everyone knew that song. Yeah. But I had gotten a cassette of Angel Dust sometime before this, and I was really into it.
Me too.
They really opened my mind as being as far as like accepting different styles of rock and heavy rock and stuff. And this album was a big deal because like songs on this album, like Evidence, like which is that kind of jazzy song, nightclub yeah. kind of sleazy song, and like Take This Bottle, which is like weirdly country. Yeah. Like stuff like that kind of expanded my palette of like what I was into, and this was a big deal for me, I think, at that time.
What the Faith No More is one of those genre defying bands that everybody loved. Everybody heard Epic on the radio, but they did whatever the hell they wanted to do, and they did it well. They always did it well. One of my favorite songs on this album is "Dig in the Grave." Which yeah. was covered by Sentenced a few years later, which was great too.
Yeah.
But yeah, I've always been a huge Faith No More fan, and I was hoping to see them live this year, but that didn't happen.
Yeah.
Have you guys seen them live before?
No. Yes.
Have you? When?
Oh, so for me, it was Guns N' Roses, Metallica, Faith No More.
Yep. At the Astrodome.
I have no memory of that show. Actually, mine was in California.
Oh, really?
My only memory of the show is being in the stadium, in the stands, and looking around and seeing the stage in the distance. But if you ask me, like, oh, were Faith No More good that day? No. I don't know. I'm sure they were.
What year was that? That was
93? 92?
No.
Can't remember. I was like 10 years old or something.
Like 91 or 92. I want to say 91.
92, it looks like. Yeah, 92.
Yeah. I'm off on every year so far.
I was definitely at that show. I remember it was the Astro Dome, so it was fucking horrible sound. and I remember Axl Rose being a bitch about something. I don't remember what it was. He was like late and took forever to come out or something like that. I don't remember.
Huh.
Yeah. It was a good show, though.
Yeah, mine was like Candlestick Park in San Francisco.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Astrodome was not great for concerts like that. You could feel the people, but
the only show I've seen Motorhead and Def Leppard at the Astrodome, and that's it. Like rock wise.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'm sorry that you saw Def Leppard.
Well, it was all right, you know. It's kind of the only band that could work in the Astrodome with the kind of pop sound they got going on, you know?
Yeah, maybe so. Yeah, so why did you pick The Gentle Art of Making Enemies? Both of you guys.
Well, if I'm being honest, I probably should have picked Evidence because that's my favorite song on the album. But, you know, it's not a metal song.
That's okay, though.
I actually didn't really... If you ask me, like, what are my least favorite songs in this album, it's probably the more direct rock songs, and I thought they were the least interesting. But this song over the years has been like, yeah, it's a great song, you know? Digging the Grave is probably my least favorite song on the album. Yeah, but, yeah, I don't know. I just remember, like, listening to this album intensely when it came out, so...
Very cool.
Mine, I guess the reason I like it, I guess he's the different styles of Mike Patton in that song. He kind of does a little bit of everything. He even yeah. talks in like a weird voice at some point. And then,
yeah.
you know, the classic, you know, don't you look so surprised? Happy birthday, fucker. You yeah. know why?
yep. So,
I mean, I just remember that one the most, I guess. I love that whole album, though, but that one always sticks out because of the comedy part of it.
So before Faith No More, we head down. So I wanted to take a few moments and talk about some of the other albums that came out in 1995 that we don't really have to discuss them very long, but I just want to sort of like at least talk about them for a second. 24/7 Spies, Temporarily Disconnected. I don't know if you guys are a fan of these guys. There's some band called AC/DC. They put out an album called Ballbreaker. I feel like that album was like more recent than that, but I guess it wasn't.
That's because they have had like two or three albums since then. So
they all sound the same.
So that's probably
the self-titled Alice in Chains album came out that year.
Hmm.
The one with the three-legged dog on the cover.
Old tripod.
Yep. The Black Winter Day EP came out the year after Tales from the Thousand Lakes came out. And that had their cover of The Doors on there, which I loved. Anathema, The Silent Enigma, came out. And so did Pentecost 3, the EP. We talked to, Bad Brains, Arion, The Final Experiment. Somehow that got taken off of our list, didn't it? Who did that?
I think you did.
Oh my God. We were going to play Arion, but I decided not to. The Final Experiment came out in 1995. Again, not my first involvement with the band. I think it took me a long time to get into them. The Human Equation was my very first major release from them in 2004. And then I went back into their first five albums and fell in love with the band, you know? Bouse of Goss put out an album that year, A Black Moon Broods Over Lemuria.
That's an awesome.
Yeah.
That's probably my favorite of theirs, actually.
Yeah, it's a good album. Behemoth put out their first album. Their early with an EP or the full album? His debut studio album, yeah. Going through the list. Black Sabbath. Bruce Dickinson put out a live album. Clawfinger. Do you guys a fan of Clawfinger?
They were from Sweden, right?
Yes, they were. They were weird, too.
Yeah, I remember. Yeah.
Crowbar, Time Heals Nothing. We were going to play something from them. The Crown put out The Burning, which back then they were known as Crown of Thorns. Dark Tranquility put out The Gallery. We were also going to play something from this album, too. What song did you pick out? Punish My Heaven?
Yeah, Punish My Heaven.
Yeah.
That's the most well-known one, I guess, probably from that.
Yep. Deicide, Once Upon the Cross. Great, great album from them. Still one of my favorite death metal albums. The first couple of Deicide albums, man. They deliver. Dismember, Massive Killing Capacity. Great album. Dokken put out an album out that year. Rockin' Dokken. I'm trying to look at the track listing. Do you remember? I don't really remember songs from this album, so it wasn't great, I guess.
Was George Lynch even in the band at that time? Who knows, right?
Dream Theater put out a Change of Seasons EP. This is still my go-to song. You ever been to a bar where they have those digital jukeboxes where you can put you put some money in and you get to pick a song? I always pick A Change of Seasons because it's like 30 minutes long. Yeah.
Yeah, and I love that. It's one of my, you know, I used to really be into Dream Theater, but I didn't want to add it to this playlist because
yes.
That would be the whole.
That'd be the whole episode right there. Ed Guy put out Savage Poetry.
Good too.
Not my favorite. It was a great first album, but it's not my favorite Ed Guy release, you know?
Yeah. They re-recorded it.
I was about
it.
To say,
it
they re-recorded better. It in 2000, didn't they?
Yeah.
Fight put out A Small Deadly Space, their second album. Not as good as the first Fight album, for sure. Gamma Ray put out Land of the Free. You almost picked something from this album, right?
Yeah. That was classic power metal album.
I mean, you have Michael Kiske and Hanzi on this album, so.
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't feel like, I don't remember Gamma Ray being around that long. It doesn't feel like, but Kai Hansen, I guess, did leave the Halloween in the early 90s, you know what I mean? Late 80s.
So, my first Gamma Ray was, Heading for Tomorrow was 90.
Yeah, I guess it was.
So,
with Ralph Sheepers.
Yeah.
From Primal Fear, who just put out a new album.
And this was the first album without Ralph, so it was, you know, Kai was handling most of the lead vocals, and man, the attack on this album, you think like, Gamma Ray, it's like white-hearted metal. No, go back, listen to this album, it's heavy.
Yes.
It is aggressive and intense, it's great.
And I like Kai Hansen as a vocalist.
Oh, yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
So you also had Grip Inc., The Power of Inner Strength, the very first Grip Inc. album. Phenomenal. Gus Chambers and Dave Lombardo on drums, and this guy named Waldemar Shorishka. I hope I'm saying him right, but he's also a producer too. He's produced a lot of extreme metal stuff in his career.
Century Media guy for sure.
He was definitely a Century Media guy. Yeah. Hellstar put out multiples of Black that year. Local band. Not my favorite album by them, but one of my favorite songs is from that album. So Iced Earth put out Burnt Offerings.
Yeah.
Immortal put out Battle of the North. We should have played something from this album, man.
That's a good album. Battles of the North, yeah.
In Flames, Subterranean EP, Iron Maiden, The X Factor, Camelot, Eternity. Now, I'm surprised you didn't pick something from this Camelot album.
Well, Sean. So the vocalist was Mark Vanderbilt.
Yeah.
And he wasn't good.
Okay. Yeah.
So Camelot to me didn't really come alive until Roy joined the band and was writing with the band. So I would say Fourth Legacy, 99.
Okay.
That's where I'm at with Camelot as well.
Yeah.
When Roy joined, yeah, that's when they kind of got in their own.
King Diamond, The Spider's Lullaby, Creator, Cause for Conflict, Christian Black Force, The Main. Yeah.
Yeah, we didn't play any Cause for Conflict, huh?
No, we should have.
Yeah, Christian's awesome, too.
Caius in the Crowd and the Circus Leaves Town, great album. Malevolent Creation, Eternal. The Smells Like Children, Marilyn Manson EP. The Hidden Treasures EP from Megadeth, man. It was like all their great songs from like soundtracks and stuff like that and some live stuff. Some of my favorite Megadeth songs are from that album.
Yeah, 99 Ways to Die.
99 Ways to Die, Angry Again, Go to Hell from the Bill and Ted movie. And Ted.
Yeah.
Meshuggah, Destroy, Erase, Improve. Mind Rot and put out Dawning. Not a lot of people talk about this band.
That's a great album. Their two albums and that EP are awesome.
Yes. They put out, they turned into Eyes of Fire that came out in like the years later. Yeah.
That was good, too, actually.
Yep. Dopes to Infinity from Monster Magnet. Moonspell, Wolfheart, Morbid Angel, Domination. We originally had Where the Slime Live on our playlist because that album is so fucking phenomenal. I think it's probably my favorite. I want to say one of my favorite Morbid Angel albums, maybe number two in the list.
Yeah, it's really where they got more slow and sludgy.
Yeah.
Not 100 miles an hour like the albums before.
And then we had Moonspell with Wolfheart, and my favorite band is named after that album, apparently. My Dying Bride, The Angel in the Dark River came out. Let's see. Nothing Face, okay. The November's Doom Admitted Hollowed Mirth, the first full-length November's Doom album came out that year. Ozzy Osbourne, Osmosis, Paradise Lost, Draconian Times. Let's see. Rainbow, Red Hot Chili Peppers. Sentenced to Mock, we talked about that a little bit. Septic Flesh put out an album in 19, second full length album from that band. I don't remember them being that around that long. But they have.
No, they kind of just gained popularity in the last, I don't know, decade, maybe.
Yeah, but I think so.
Been a long time.
Let's see. Sinister Hate, 6 Feet Under, Haunted, Skepticism, Storm Crow Fleet.
Oh, so good.
It's one of the best slow funeral dirge bands out there, man. Skid Row, Subhuman Race, Sodom, Masquerade in Blood, Stratovarius, Fourth Dimension, Suffocation, Pierced from Within. Fucking great album. Stuck Mojo, Snapping Necks. I really liked Stuck Mojo back in the day for some reason. I don't know what it was, but I did.
Me too. They sound kind of cheesy when you play them now.
Yeah.
They haven't dated what it really
aged
very well.
Symphony X, The Damnation Game. Theater of Tragedy, self-titled album. Sarion, Lepaka Kifos. I know you like that album, right?
It was a transition album for them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Between the death metal of Symphony Masses and then they did Theli the next year. So, yeah, 96 is like a pretty spectacular year. That's what made me realize when we were researching 95 was like, oh shit, 96 might be more, like for me, more personally significant for me.
Well, we have time to go through every year if we want to.
Yeah, sure. Be another podcast.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Vader De Profundis, Voivod Negatron, love that album. Yeah, so this was their weird, really doing that weird psychedelic, you know, stuff. Let's see, White Zombie, you mentioned them, Mark. Astro Creep 2000 was okay album. I don't think I listened to it very often, though.
But yeah, I listened to that nonstop.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was my second concert I went to. It was them and Melvins played together the Astro Arena. But I've always liked the Sex of Sisto way a lot better.
Than me Master too. It's a great album. Yeah. There you go. That's 1995 in a nutshell. We've done it. Done it, gentlemen.
I'm in a nutshell.
That's right. Okay, Austin Powers. So, not my favorite year of music, but there were some phenomenal, great albums that came out this year.
It was such an interesting time. And it made me, one of the things I think about sometimes is like, because like hair metal, well, glam metal and even mainstream metal was sort of waning in popularity.
And
it kind of gave incentive to like lower, more underground bands to just do what they wanted to do.
Sure. Because
you don't have a chance of becoming the next Skid Row because that era is already over.
Yeah.
So instead of going for the mainstream play, you go for whatever your creativity wants you to get out.
And the mainstream was definitely going into that. Like you said, it's sort of the post grunge stuff.
Yeah.
It wasn't even really like early, you know, grunge stuff. It was like bands like Bush and that radio friendly polished stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, but I mean, Bush had a couple of good songs, but there was like I said, Godsmack formed that year. So it was a wash.
Yeah. Yeah, think about like, you know, the year before you had In Flames doing Lunar Strain, then in 96 they did Just Erase. It's like, well, that kind of like, if these kids from Sweden had any idea of like, oh, we could get big if we just do an album like Metallica, or if we do an album like whatever is on the radio, like
they eventually did, unfortunately.
Well, they did, but at the time,
yeah,
they were just like, fuck it, let's just do like whatever we want to do.
Yeah,
it's like, you know, Hammerfall came out as a result of that, you know, like a couple years later in 97. It's like, no one's playing this kind of music, and this is what we want to hear, so we're going to just do it. So, you know,
very, very true. So, is there anything, if there's anything that we missed that is your favorite album from this year, your favorite song or your favorite concert that you saw, let us know. MSRcast@gmail.com. We're all over social media at MSRcast. We're on Twitter. We're on we're on Instagram. We're on Facebook. You can also find our sister show, the Metal Geeks Podcast, on all those platforms. And there's something that brand new that we're working on. Well, it's not new, but we've been trying to sort of push it recently, called the Metal Geeks Society. It's a Facebook group. Find it on there. Just do a search for Metal Geeks Society. We talk about heavy metal. We talk about geeky stuff. And, you know, if you're a fan of this show or if you're a fan of the other show too, it's a welcoming place. And we talk about all kinds of, you know, cool stuff. And, of course, you can find us on our website at metalgeekspodcast.net. We're on all kinds of platforms like Spotify and Apple Podcasts and all these places. Any place you can download a podcast, you can find us there. Now, Sean, where can they find you? And what are you working on right now?
Honestly, I've been sort of having writer's block recently.
Mm.
I think I was trying to figure it out. I was talking to like a friend of mine. I was like, the fuck is going on right now? And he's like, oh, there's not really anything going on. So, you know, I'm used to going to shows and I'm used to being
that
engaged.
Inspiration,
And I'm just sort of like running into a wall. And so I started thinking about like, maybe I should just start writing about that, about how I'm running into a wall. So I don't know. Mm. I'll come out with something. But right now I'm just sort of like, it's also been a lull in, you know, new releases, like nothing interesting that interesting has come out except for the new Judicator album. So.
I listened to a song today and it totally paying homage or stealing from Iron Maiden, but that's okay.
Yeah, no, yeah, you know, Blind Guardian, Iron Maiden, their influences. Yeah.
Yep, for sure.
Oh, the new Primal Fear is pretty fun too.
Yes, you know? It's not great, but it's fun.
It's solid. Yeah.
All right, cool. Where can people find you on the internet?
At the Metal Pigeon on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram.
Now, our special guest here, Mark, I know you're working on a new album for your band, right? Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Sure. The band's Long Since Dark, which is named after the Sanctuary song. It's doom metal. It mixes in some black and death here and there, but it's kind of doom metal, like My Dying Bride, Anathema at Heart. And thanks to COVID, I've had plenty of time to start working on it. So hope to get that released in October. And Facebook is the only place I'm at now, but I plan to be on Spotify and all those other places as soon as the album gets ready to come out.
Do you have a band page already on Facebook?
Yes.
Cool. And where else can people find you on the internet?
Sadly, other than a bunch of illegal torrent sites like Pirate Bay and stuff, nowhere. So I've kind of been on a hiatus for like the last 8 years. So Facebook's about the best place right now. That.
No, it's not.
No, it's not. Instagram's way better. I should have that. So.
Well, thanks for hanging out with me this evening, guys, and reminiscing back to 1995, even though some of us were only like 3 years old during that year. Looking at you, Sean. Now, we have one last song we're going to play. Something very influential in my musical change around this time. A buddy of mine who I went to high school with in junior high, actually still a good friend of mine, my friend Mark, he's like, there's this band you have to hear. And we were driving to his house and he popped in Strapping Young Lad, Heavy Is a Really Heavy Thing, and I didn't know what the fucking make of it, but I loved it. You know, Devin Townsend is a living legend. He's one of my favorite artists of all time. Actually, today he was hanging out on Twitch, playing acoustic and just talking to people and being weird. It was cool.
Yeah.
Sounds like him, right? But yeah. I wanted to play one of my favorite songs from this album, In the Rainy Season. And if you haven't checked out his podcast that he's been doing, he's been going through his catalog and talking about the making of the album, what his thought process was during the time, and then going through each track on the album. So he's already done this album, which was a lot of fun. He's had a lot of mental things in his life, but you know, I'm glad he's well now and putting out new music all the time. And so, yeah, Strapping Young Lad. Do you guys ever see these guys live?
Yeah.
No, I missed them. They played a little club off the self-titled album, and I missed it. And they played Ozfest 1 year or something,
they
too,
did.
Right?
I remember seeing them. They played at Fitzgerald at one point, didn't they?
With Hypocrisy?
With Hypocrisy? It might have been. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. Yeah, I was at that show.
Yeah, that's the only time I'd ever seen them. Yeah. I think. I don't remember.
It was Engine Room, I think.
I remember seeing them at Fitzgerald's, man.
Oh.
We'll have to look it up.
I wish I wrote all these shows down.
I know. There should be a website where you just go search for a band, and it tells you what year they played with what band and where they played. You know what I mean? That'd be great.
Good idea, yeah.
I know setlist.fm sort of has that a little bit, but not to the ability that I want to look up. Yeah. You know what I mean? So, all right, guys. Thanks for hanging out with us tonight, taking our way back machine to 1995. And as always, we have one last thing we have to say.
Keep it metal.
Keep it metal, indeed. Thank you, guys. Thank you, Mark.
Thank you. Fuck!
Hey, Geekazoids. Thanks for listening to another fine podcast brought to you by MSR Productions. All rights reserved, blah, 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 blah. For reviews, archives of our podcasts, and all your other metal geekery needs, please visit metalgeeks.net. Keep it geeky. Keep it metal.